Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, sponsored by ACR Poker, where no matter who you are, I have a bonus for you. For those who have not yet joined ACR Poker, there's a link in the description of this podcast, and you can sign up and become part of the action and get a first-time deposit bonus of 100% up to $2,000 just by using the promo code TPE. And if you're already on the site and you want to beef up your bankroll just a little bit, you can get a 50% bonus on crypto reload deposits by using the promo code CashBloom. And this is perfect timing because next month we are doing the largest guaranteed prize pool ever on any US facing site, the $12.5 million Venom, which begins April 14th. My name is Clayton Fletcher and I am back in New York City, my home for the last 20 plus years. And I'm happy to be bringing you this episode. This is the quarterly recap episode. First off, what that means is that at the beginning of every year, I set goals for the year. And this year, every 3 months, on the last episode of each quarter, we're going to take a look back at those goals that I set right at the beginning of this year. And then we're going to see how I'm doing in terms of meeting those goals. So first goal for the year, 60 live MTTs, and now coming up on the end of Q1, as we say in the business world, I have played 7. So 7 of 60 have been completed. Of course, most of these will happen during the World Series of Poker, but I was hoping to get some tournaments in during the winter time, and of course, hopefully I can grab a few more in the spring as a warm-up towards all the live poker I intend to play this summer. More on that in a minute. Another goal for the year is 400 online MTTs. And so far this year, I've played 102. So that is right in line with the target total. I have a big goal this year to stream in 2024 to get my Twitch stream up and running. As you all know, I've already gotten that happening. It's doing great. You guys can follow me on twitch.tv/ClaytonComic. Another goal I had for the year, study 120 hours. Well, I'm already at 42, wrapping up the first quarter. So I'm really happy with where I'm at in terms of poker study for 2024. Another goal, live cash, 250 hours. So I'm really going to have to focus on this. I'm only at 31 hours for the year, so I've got a lot of work to do in the live cash streets. And finally, 50 episodes of the TPE podcast. At this point, this episode that you are currently listening to is number 13 for the year. So right in line with expectations. We're very happy to have so many loyal subscribers downloading and listening each and every week. So we're going to keep doing this podcast to bring you at least 50 this year. All right, well, the big news this week is they did finally release the schedule for the Wynn Poker Room. Now, you guys know how I feel about Wynn. They are second to none, the best place that I know of in this world to play poker. Right there on the boulevard, the strip, as we call it, Las Vegas Boulevard in fabulous Las Vegas, and I will be spending a good amount of time there myself in the coming months. I can hardly wait for the WSOP to get started, and with it, the Wynn Summer Signature Series, whatever you want to call it. They have something that I just can't wait to try. It's called the Century PKO. Okay, it's the week starting June 10th, and this is a different format from anything I've ever seen before. What it is, it's a normal tournament until you get down to 100 players. So that's why it's called a Century PKO. And it's a $1,600 buy-in with 4 starting days. At some point on day 2, By the way, this tournament has a $2.5 million guarantee, so they're expecting a lot of players for a $1,600 buy-in. So at some point on day two, we'll get down to 100 players. And from there, each player will have a $10,000 progressive knockout bounty. And for those who have never played that format, I love PKOs online. There haven't been that many historically live. And this is a great way to settle it. You've got 100 players, so we should all be able to keep track of how many people have been busted and by whom. And the PKO bounty starts at 10K and just rises and rises from there. The more people you knock out, the more your bounty is worth. Now, this is going to be crazy. That final table is going to have some big, big numbers on it. In addition to the 2.5 million guaranteed prize pool, I'm very, very excited. Leave it to the guys at the Win to come up with yet another wonderful and exciting, as yet unsolved, poker tournament format. Other highlights, right after Memorial Day, they're having a big $2 million No Limit Hold'em tournament with an $1,100 buy-in. Wow, that's amazing. That's going to be a big prize pool for that price point. You guys know I'll be playing the $3 million Mystery Bounty event, my favorite, a $2,200 buy-in beginning June 17th. There's also a $3,500 buy-in with multiple starting days with a $4 million guaranteed prize pool beginning June 24th. And of course, the Win Summer Championship, their main event, which is a 10K with a $10 million guaranteed prize pool. Also some high rollers, a couple of 25Ks in there, plenty of PLO events, a seniors high roller, a $10,000 seniors only 50 plus tournament beginning June 27th, continuing a trend we've seen with some of the other Vegas properties for this summer, kind of thinking that some of the early online superstars and others who have just been around the game for a long time and might have accumulated a bankroll to where they can play a 10K, they might want to play against other people in their age range and older. And so, yeah, I'm wondering how these big buy-in seniors events are going to do. Let me know what you think about the Win Summer Classic, that's what it's called, tournament schedule. Hit me up on Twitter at Clayton Comic. You can also join the TPE Discord. There's a link in the description of this podcast. You can click on that and then become as immersed as you would like to be in all things TPE. All right, let's take a look back at last week's hand using a tool called GTO Wizard. I've been getting really good feedback from you guys about GTO Wizard and about the new podcast format where we always start off by kind of taking one more look at last week's hand or hands through the lens of artificial intelligence, solver, whatever you want to call it. So let's go back and check out what we were talking about was the $55 long card daily double. Just to refresh your memory, the blinds were 800, 1600 with a 200 ante per person, and we had 100,000 in the stack when the average was 65K. The action folded to the button, who opened for the minimum to 32K with only 20 big blinds, and I called from the big blind with 7 of spades, 4 of spades, so 7-4 suited. A suited two-gap semi-connector, I guess. I was getting better than 4-1. The solver likes my play, even though our opponent has a very short stack of 20 big blinds. GTO Wizard has this as a pure 100% call. 7-4 suited in this situation is always a call. So the flop came 10 of diamonds, 6 of clubs, 5 of clubs. So I had the open-ended straight draw opponent. I checked and opponent bet 4,000, at which point I made a call. I think last week I was talking about feeling a little handcuffed, like I didn't want to check raise. Maybe I could check shove and take it down a lot, but I didn't feel like I'd have a lot of maneuverability given the effective stack starting the hand with only 20 big blinds. The solver likes my check on the flop 100% of the time and also likes my flat call 85% of the time, but sometimes raises and occasionally even shoves. However, it's mostly a call, 85% call, so I'll give myself a little check mark for that. At that point, with 16,600 in the pot, our opponent had only 26,000 behind, and the turn paired the board with the 10 of spades, at which point I checked again and opponent checked behind. The solver likes my check from out of position 98% of the time, but it's worth mentioning that 2% of the time we're supposed to sprinkle in a little probe, a little less than half the pot, and just see if we can take it down. We're still open-ended. We have outs. Almost certainly. The river came the deuce of spades, so we're left with 7 high. We missed everything. And so at that point, I decided to bet, and I bet small, 5,700 into the 16,600 pot and took it down. The solver loves betting on the river. We actually never check the river when we get there with this exact hand. We bet my size, the size I chose, about 1/3 of the pot, 55% of the time. We actually overbet shove about 30% of the time, and the other 15-ish percent of the time we sprinkle in some other sizes here and there. But yeah, the play that I made was actually the favorite play of GTO Wizard. Now, if you guys are not yet using GTO Wizard, I really recommend it. This is a really strong tool to help you improve your game. You can study literally any spot that may come up, either in a tournament or a cash game. You can consider ICM. You can take that out and just go chip EV, however you want to do it. You can change the sizes of the stacks. You can vary them. You can pick any spot and just drill it. They have practice drills that are pre-programmed, or you can also create your own if you notice certain situations that you never really can figure out how to play. The program is so easy to use. I am not a tech wizard by any stretch of the imagination, but I have no trouble at all using GTO Wizard. And right now, if you guys want to join, click the link in the description of this podcast. You can try it for free, but as long as you register using the link that we have, it's called our affiliate link, then if and when you do decide to pony up a few bucks and join the paid version of this amazing software, you can actually save 10% on your first purchase because you signed up with that link. So just check the description of the podcast. We used to call them the show notes, and you'll see it there right where it says GTO Wizard. All right, so the other hand from last week, guys, was a level later, 900, 1800 with a 225 ante. We had 100K and the average was 78K, and we were approaching the money about 20, 25 places away from the money. In third position, our chip leader opened for the minimum off of a stack of 180,000, and the action folded to me on the button with the ace of hearts, queen of diamonds. I went for the three bet, making it 10.5K, a pretty small three bet to about 6 big blinds. The action folded back all the way back to the original raiser who made the call from out of position. And now we were in position, heads up with ace queen offsuit. The solver actually calls about 67% of the time and does three bet with ace queen offsuit about 33% of the time. But when the solver three bets, it goes a little bigger. I made it about 6 big blinds. The solver wants to do 7.5 big blinds. I knew that my three bet sizing was small. I was hoping to get action from hands that I had dominated, of which I thought there should be many. Anyway, the flop came king of clubs, jack of clubs, 6 of diamonds, and hero with the ace of hearts, queen of diamonds. So not a great flop. Opponent checked, and I decided to check behind. Solver does not like my play here at all, only checking back about 1.2% of the time. Usually about 60% of the time, the solver just goes ahead and does a continuation bet, about a quarter pot C bet on this board, half the pot bet about 30% of the time. So yeah, checking back, we're not really going to get too much credit for doing that. But my reasoning was I have a draw to the nuts. I have some amount of equity. And this particular opponent was so wild and so loose, I wanted to avoid getting check raised, which I thought would happen a lot. And then I wouldn't really know what to do. I guess I would have to fold, even though I have an overcard and a gut shot and everything else going on. I would probably end up folding the best hand a good amount of the time. So to avoid that problem, I decided to just check behind. But no, solver says, slap on the wrist on that one, Clayton. I only do this 1.2% of the time. Do not argue with the wizard. Anyway, with 25K in the middle, the turn came the five of clubs. An opponent checked, and I also checked once more. We talked about last week how I just wanted to realize my equity and not bluff this guy. I was planning to call some bets on clean rivers. Anyway, the solver hardly ever even gets to this point in the hand because mostly we are betting on the flop nearly 99% of the time. But on the rare occasion that the solver checks it back, at this point, we do a check back 25% of the time, but mostly we're betting quarter pot, having checked back on the flop. I don't have any clubs in my hand. There were a lot of clubs on the board. I had my reasons, but yeah, GTO Wizard still kind of wants me to bet here with the ace queen. So still 25K in the middle, and the river came the six of clubs. So now that pairs the board and puts a fourth club on the board. Opponent bets 19,000 into the 25,000 pot, and I folded. Again, solver would hardly ever get to this point in the hand. I mean, it's minuscule the percentage of the time that the solver checks both the flop and the turn in this situation. But if we do happen to get here, we're supposed to fold 99% of the time. So I'm not sure how to score it. I guess I'm just supposed to bet. I guess overall, King Jack 6, even with the two clubs, it's a better flop for my range than it is for my opponent's range. And the way solvers approach the game is they don't really care what our exact hand is a lot of the time. If you're supposed to bet your range, you bet your range. And typically, two broadways and one low card is a better flop for the preflop aggressor. All right, so those are the hands from last week. Let's move forward with some new strategy hands from the same tournament. Obviously, I played in this tournament for quite a while, and I found that a lot of the spots I ended up in were interesting, at least to me. I hope they're also interesting to you. That with the blinds at 1K and 2K, we have now moved to a new table. We've been at this table for about 30 or 40 hands. We have 118,000 when the average stack is about 90,000. We are in the money at this point with 81 players remaining in the tournament. The table was playing seven-handed. Someone had busted out. Two folds to the hijack, who was a tight opponent. Like I said, I haven't been at this table for that long. In about 35-ish hands, we have noticed that this player has not been very involved. But how much stock should we put into that? Remember, when we arrived at this table, we were on the bubble. And many players are very tight on the bubble, and some would say you should be tight on the bubble because they don't think ICM is for poor people. So now that we're in the money, do we really expect this opponent to continue to be tight? Not really knowing that much about him and having such a small sample size to go on, I'm not really sure how much stock we should put in these 35-ish hands that we've had with this opponent. However, that is the information we have, however incomplete, and that's what we know thus far. Anyway, two folds to the player I just described, and since it's a seven-handed table, that means he's in the hijack position, and he opens to 4,600 off of a stack of 115,000, which is almost as big as the stack that I have. So we are two of the biggest stacks at the table. We're both well above average. So I barely have him covered. The cutoff folds, and now on the button, who is probably about as opposite of a playing style as you can imagine from the player we just described, this guy's running 27-18 with 13% 3-bet. But again, it's only been 35 hands, and he may have been trying to be a bubble abuser. We've basically only been at this table through the bubble period of this tournament, both the soft bubble and the actual bubble. So I'm not sure how much stock to put in these numbers, but one player had been tight, and now this player, who 3-bets a lot, 3-bets to 12,000 off of a stack of 70,000, and it folds now to me in the big blind, holding the ace of hearts, ace of clubs. Wow, I mean, a lot of action. There's nothing like having a big hand in the big blind and all kinds of action taking place before it's your turn. Now, typically, you guys know I am not a big advocate of slow playing monsters. Generally speaking, we want to try to get as many chips as we can in pre-flop before our opponents figure out how beat they are. But in this particular instance, I was sort of hoping that I could maybe get all the chips in three ways if I would just call. Now I'm really hoping that the original raiser, who again was that tight player, I'm hoping that he has a big hand, maybe pocket queens or ace king, something like that, and that maybe all three of us will put all of our chips in with Hero holding the nuts. That would be the dream, right? So to make that happen, I decided to flat call. I mean, look, if either one of my opponents has a big hand, we're probably going to end up getting all the chips in the middle sooner or later anyway, but especially that original raiser, if he has pocket kings or something, if he's near the top of his range, he's very likely to play a huge pot with me right now, and possibly we can find a way to sandwich the loose, aggressive opponent on the button in between us when we both have legitimate holdings. That's the dream, so I just called. Instead, the original raiser also just called, and so now we're going to see a three-way flop with 39,000 in the middle and the button only with 58,000. Now, he's the three-better. He's got an SPR of under two, and our other opponent with 103,000 and his SPR is under three. So all three of us see a flop, and it comes ace of spades, eight of diamonds, five of clubs. Now you might be thinking, what a great flop for pocket aces, but I was actually worried that I had all the cards worth having on this board. There aren't very many draws available, and I don't see how anybody could have like 7-6 or 7-9 or something. I guess it's theoretically possible. But yeah, I wasn't really happy with this flop. And I think I said that out loud, actually, when I played this hand live on my Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ClaytonComic, which also confused some in the chat. So yeah, I checked. The tight player also checked. And now the button fires, but very small, just 10,000 into the 39,000 pot. You know, we could talk about my options here. Like, I can go for the check raise right now. Hope that one of these guys has a hand like ace king or ace queen. It's unlikely, though, because there's only one ace available that I don't know the location of. So I wasn't really excited about trying to check raise this board. I just felt like, especially with no possible flush draws and not really any reasonable straight draws available, it just didn't feel like I could get much action for my check raise. So I decided to continue the slow play. I just called, and the tighty who started this mess to begin with now overcalls. So all three of us are going to see a turn card, and now with 69,000 in the pot and the button only has 48,000 in his remaining stack, the other player, by the way, has 93,000 now, the turn comes the queen of spades. So our board is now ace of spades, eight of diamonds, five of clubs, queen of spades. And this just feels like a great time to talk about why being out of position is such a problem. Look, I have the nuts still on the turn. I do not know if anyone just picked up a flush draw or if that's even possible with whatever ranges both of these guys are playing. I decided I should try to get some more money in the pot. I was really worried about this checking through. So, for example, if someone decided to play King Jack this way, I really don't want to give a free card for somebody to hit some kind of gut shot. I also thought I could get action if anyone did have an ace or perhaps had picked up a flush draw with this queen of spades on the turn. Obviously, I'm always getting action when they have monsters of their own, like a worse set. But honestly, it's not really worth even thinking about that because in all likelihood, the money's going in when two players have really big hands, no matter what you do. So it's more about trying to figure out how to extract value from a hand like ace king, ace jack, or a flush draw, possibly a combo draw, something like king jack suited or king 10 suited. Otherwise, I'm really not going to get much action if I bet. So that brings us to, should we just check this card and see if our pre-flop three better wants to fire another barrel? I don't know if that's a good play, though, because he's getting kind of short stacked. He fired on the flop and got called in two spots, which probably raised some red flags in his head, which might make him want to wave a white flag those times when he has nothing. It's rare for someone to continue bluffing when two players call him on the flop. So for that reason, I just felt like being optimistic and putting out a bet. So I put out a small bet for sure, just $17,000 into the 69K pot. So a quarter pot bet on the turn. And to my chagrin, both opponents folded. I still got a lot of value for my hand. I have no way of knowing whether checking would have resulted in more chips going into the middle or not. But when I bet very small on the turn, everybody else gave up and ran screaming into the night. Okay, let's do one more hand. A little while later, the blinds were 1250 and 2500 with a 325 ante. Our table is now eight-handed. Same table we were at before and the same opening raiser from the other hand, the tight guy. He's now up to 17-7. That's 17 VPIP and 7 PFR over 55 hands. He makes it 5K, so a min raise. He's got 85,000 in his stack, so he starts the hand with 34 big blinds. And the action folds all the way around to me in the big blind with the ace of spades, queen of diamonds. So ace-queen off suit facing a min raise from third position. Well, you know, I've been observing this player for a while now. We've got 55 hands. It's not a lot, but it's more than you usually get in a live poker tournament before they move you to some other table. So given the information I have, I felt like I should just call. This guy really wasn't fooling around. He's not a guy that's getting in there, mixing it up, trying to win every hand. He just seemed like he was playing a pretty conservative value type of strategy. Just tight, aggressive poker. So I don't know if ace-queen is really doing great against his early position opening range. I guess eight-handed, I should say, early middle position. But yeah, he's in third position at an eight-handed table. So I didn't really want to get into some kind of big confrontation with him. I mean, I had plenty of chips. I had 165,000. I was one of the chip leaders in the tournament. I didn't feel like it was necessary to go to war pre-flop, so I decided to make the call. And now, with 14,000 in the middle, we saw a flop of 10 of spades, 7 of clubs, tray of hearts. So 10-7-3, rainbow hero with the ace of spades, queen of diamonds. And I'm first. I decided to check to the raiser, who checked behind. So still 14K in the middle. The turn came the tray of spades, pairing the board and putting two spades on the board. It's up to me now, and bear in mind, I do have the ace of spades in my hand. I feel like you could definitely do a probe here, maybe just like 4,500 or 5,000, and see if this guy just wants to go away for a cheap bet. I decided to check again, but I think there's probably some merit to betting small on the turn. Like, if he has nothing at all, he'll probably just give it up, especially a player with this tight, aggressive profile who did not c-bet on the flop. So I did check, though, and he checked behind. And now on the river, it's the eight of spades, which completes the flush on a board of 10, 7, 3, 3, 8. And we have the ace of spades. I can absolutely bet this river. I actually decided to go for a check raise. I don't think our opponent will have a flush very often. I could certainly have one. I might play a flush this way, just hoping we can get him to bluff the river so I can check raise him with my flush. But bear in mind, that's going to depend on his sizing. So if this opponent bets big on the end, I'll feel like he's polarizing himself towards trips or a big overpair that he decided to slow play all the way down for some reason. And I feel like I can check raise more often when he bets really small on the end, like a quarter pot bet, which he might do with a hand like pocket nines or possibly, you know, a 10. I don't know how many 10s he has in his range. But the point is, my decision to check raise bluff on the end is going to partly be based on my opponent's bet sizing on the river. Now, here's the problem with a strategy like, let's go for a check raise bluff on the river. That strategy depends on the opponent actually making a bet, which this guy did not. He was happy to check it all the way down because he had ace king. And we end up losing a small pot being pipped with ace queen versus ace king. I don't know if I would have played this hand the same way 2 or 3 years ago, but as I have mentioned in recent episodes, I've been trying to take down my aggression levels in certain spots, especially when I have, or at least when I think I have, perceived showdown value with holdings like ace-queen, which are actually quite crushed and dominated, as they were in this situation. But yeah, it just felt like a spot for me to not have to be aggressive. I thought that my hand could stand on its own, and I think it will sometimes be good. I imagine this particular opponent would have played ace-jack the same way, and I could have won the small pot instead of him. And that'll do it for this episode, guys. I appreciate all of the comments, and especially those of you who have taken the time to give us a favorable review, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you may be happening to listen to this particular program. I love you, TPE Nation, and for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, with special thanks, as always, to our very generous sponsor, ACR Poker. I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas plays. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me.
I love it.
Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart.
Love nobody.
Can't read my, no, she can't read.